Lantern Podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold short on 133, ready to take off.
Alpha Delta, 5362, on Mike, and it's downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of In the Pattern Podcast. This is Chris, working on a nice Killian's Irish Red tonight. Along with me is John and Mark. Say hi, guys.
Hi, this is John. I'm enjoying a nice line of Google Sunset Wheat tonight.
Hey, and this is Mark, and I've also got a Sunset Wheat, so.
Nice. So let's see if we can get through this. See if we can get through this without slurring. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to everybody who's downloaded our first podcast, and we really appreciate that. Hopefully, we can keep this interesting for you. Tonight, we're kind of going to go over our first lesson, Discovery Flight, if you will, experience we had with that, and a few other things. John, you want to talk first about your first lesson, how that went?
Yeah, I can do that. I got started with a Discovery Flight in July. I think it was July 16th of 09, about 2 weeks before I went to Oshkosh for the first time. I had gotten it as a Christmas gift from my dad and my stepmom, and so I called up flight school, went up one Saturday, I think it was a Saturday morning, and got to take a ride in a 172 with a G1000. And those things are pretty sweet. Just huge glass panels in it. It's awesome. Got to kind of get a taste of the pre-flight. Was kind of standing there waiting for her to get in the left seat and then me to get in the right seat. And I was like, you know, cool. And then she opens the left seat door and she's like, get in. And I'm like, no way. She's like, yeah, just go. So I sit in the left seat and she goes over a brief, you know, how to use all the seatbelts and all that kind of stuff. Shows me how to start it up and we start taxiing off. She, on the way down to, we're taking off at runway 33 at Martin State Airport, which is KMTN, which is where I fly out of now. Again, we're going down to 33 and it's a pretty long taxiway. I want to say probably about 4,000 feet worth of taxiway you got to go down to get to the end of the runway. And she's like, okay, here's how you taxi. Why don't you try it? And I'm sure you guys can remember when you first tried taxiing.
It wasn't pretty.
No, it wasn't.
Were you yanking all over the yoke like me, trying to turn the thing left and right, even though you knew your feet were supposed to be doing the job?
Yep, that was exactly how it went. I'm like trying to drive the plane with the yoke. My feet are just doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I got the plane just bouncing down the runway, you know, like a sine wave going down the center line. Just a horrible job of it. Thankfully, I will say on the way back, I did a little bit of a better job. After she was kind of like, yeah, don't try to push too hard. Just kind of, you know, gently just back and forth. And I did that and did a little better. But she had me do that. And then she took off and we flew over the bay. I think I did 0.8 hours that day and took it over. She kind of said, here's how you turn. Here's how you climb, descend, all that kind of stuff. Just the basic, here's how you fly, you get to get used to being in a plane. I know a lot of people, especially my mom was like, well, were you nervous? You know, you're in this tiny little plane and, you know, you're flying 3,000 feet in the air. Like, didn't that scare you? And I was like, no, like I've been wanting to do this since I was little. It was kind of more of an excitement thing, but I am not going to lie, for the first 30 seconds after we took off from the runway, I had this panic attack moment of the ground is there. I am here. There is 500 feet between me and there. And I just kind of like freaked out for a minute. And then that was it. I've never thought about it again in flying. It was just a brief 30 seconds of holy crap, I'm in the air. And then it was gone. But I mean, that was pretty much my Discovery flight. We just went over the bay, did some stuff, came back. She obviously landed it because, man, that would have been a mess.
So is that really your first time in a single engine general aviation type airplane?
That was my first time. Okay. I'd been in two commercial flights before that, maybe. Not that that's comparable at all, but like that's it. That was my time in an airplane. And even before I had ever flown an airplane, I knew I wanted to fly airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how it went with me. I was just like, I want to do it. I don't care if I've done it or not. But that was it. Like, I had already known I wanted to learn to fly before I had even had a single engine ride. And I think that's everything I can remember from that flight.
And how long ago was that?
That was, I believe it was July 16th.
Of this year.
Let me double check that. No, 2009.
Oh, okay.
I have the logbook here. The Discovery Flight people give you that little pilot logbook that can hold 16 flights in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, July 18th, 2009. It was in November 124 to Charlie. Oh, and it was a crosswind, apparently. That was my Discovery Flight. So, Chris, how was, I think we heard a little bit about your first flight last week, but...
Yeah, really, that's kind of the reason why I was asking you about your Discovery Flight, because I never really took a, what you call an official, air quotes in the air there, Discovery Flight, you know, at a school or anything like that. Like I mentioned last week, I went with a buddy of mine. We rented, like, I don't know, it was a Piper, Archer, Arrow, Comanche, Cherokee. I don't know what it was, one of those. and we flew up to Sedona, like I said, to go play golf, and I just loved it. But then there was this huge gap. Since then, up until about a year and a half ago, I hadn't flown, although I've always wanted to. But, you know, money issue, time issue, whatever. Family comes first. So then basically my wife is going to school for nursing. And she meets some nice people. One of the people that she meets, Sally, her husband has a little airplane that he's partners with out at Deer Valley. And, you know, we get to talking. He's like, hey, we want to go for a flight one day, you know? I'm like, yeah, sure. So, like, New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, I can't remember off the top of my head, a couple years ago, I met him out at Deer Valley. And he's got a hangar. And he's got a beautiful little 1946 Cessna 140 tail dragger.
That's a nice airplane.
I'll send you guys some pictures later. This thing looks like brand new from the outside. It's so pretty of a little airplane. But, you know, it's got this little 100-horse Continental, I think it's a Continental 85 or engine in it, a little 100-horse engine, and it don't go fast, but it's just a real nostalgic little, you know, two-seat tail dragger. And we went out and flew that day, and I just had a ball. It was just a great time. And you know, now I have someone with an airplane, and now all the juices start flowing. I got to do this. And all I'm thinking is, I can't wait for my wife to get done with nursing school, because that's my key. Not that I need her money, but now we don't need my side money, because I do a lot of side work, you know, in order to pay for flight lessons. And so after and I'd went with him a couple other times. What's kind of fun to do is every once in a while, he'll sign up to do a blood run. Someone from blood banks brings over blood platelets to us at the airport, and we pick them up, bring them in the airplane, and fly them up to Flagstaff. And someone from the hospital up there picks them up from us. And so he just does that once in a while. And so I went along with him last year or the winter sometime. And did that. So I've flown with them, you know, two or three times now, and just had a great time. And then this year, May 15th, it shows in my logbook, it was my actual first official flight as a student. He's the one who got me hooked up with my instructor, because they both got their instruction from the same instructor. So he goes, once you start flying, you'll probably fly like all three, you know, we'll all three fly the same way, because we're all getting taught kind of the same way. And so he hooked me up with this instructor. She has access to this airplane, and it's a 2003 Piper Archer III. Nice plane, all kind of newer technology, which is cool. And yeah, like you, John, you know, I'm thinking the same thing. I'm going to be sitting in the right seat. She's going to take me up. You know, show me the basics or whatever, but no, you know, she goes over the pre-flight inspection, the exterior of the plane, telling me exactly how to do a pre-flight. She takes what now takes me, you know, 15 minutes to do. We took about an hour on it, you know, to go over it real thoroughly. So we get the pre-flight inspection done, and she goes, okay, go ahead and get in the left seat. And I was like, just jazzed. I was like, so cool. I get to play pilot now. So I jump in there, and she gets in, and we get out the little pre-flight checklist, and we go over everything one by one. I get to start it up. That was really cool. And basically, she does the radio calls the tower, and gets clearance to taxi to the active runway. And she just shows me briefly how to, you know, she goes, you steer the plane with your feet. But of course, yeah, I'm yanking the yoke all over the place and still steering with my feet, but I'm just weaving all over the place. It looks like a drunk pilot, I'm sure. And I get to taxi it down the taxiway. She calls, gets clearance to take off. I go out there and she goes, okay, we're set for takeoff. Lights, camera, action. We're all set. Hit the throttle, going down the runway. She goes, all right, pull back, a little back pressure. Sure enough, we're off the runway. She's hovering her hands over the yoke, but I'm doing everything, and it's just awesome. You know, I'm doing all the climb out and everything, and we go out for a little while, and we go over climbs, descents, headings, altitude, work on some pilotage, and then for a little fun, she threw in emergency descents. She's like, okay, a plane's coming straight at you. What do you do? So she cuts the power and pushes the yoke down, and sure enough, we drop like 500 to 800 feet in about 2 seconds, and all of a sudden my stomach's up in my throat, and I was like, whoa, you know, I wasn't quite ready for that, but it was kind of cool just because I wasn't ready for it. It felt like, you know, cool roller coaster ride. So we worked that for a little while, and then she wanted me to, I did one of the emergency descents myself, and that wasn't near as bad when you were, you know, ready for the feeling of it, so that was fun. Headed back to Deer Valley, and again, she got everything set up for the landing. You know, well, she told me, okay, first notch of flaps, carb heat. All right, now second notch of flaps, and bring it down to, you know, 1,300 RPM or whatever, and now back to idle. Okay, last notch of flaps. She's walking me through all of it and pretty much has me land the thing with her hand still. You know, she's helping me a little bit. We're both on the controls, but I can feel I've still got authority of the yoke there. And she lets me land it, and we 1.4 hours logged in my in my logbook for my first day out. So it was too much fun. So excited for the next lesson. So that was pretty much my first day out, and I try to go out about every Sunday. Sometimes I was going out a couple times a week when I have the money, but as long as I have the money, I try and hit a lesson up every Sunday morning sometime. So.
What was the date of your first that first flight?
May 15th.
Of this year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, May 15th was my first one, and at this point, where my last flight was October 10th. It's been a couple weeks since I've flown because of one issue or another, either with the plane or she's not been available. Anyways. That was a lot of fun, and the plane's a very nice plane to fly. I'm fortunate when it comes to the airplane because for what I'm paying, I'm getting a lot of airplane for the money. And again, I'm out here in Phoenix, Arizona, obviously, May 15th. It's the beginning of summer, starting from basically the beginning of June till almost the middle of September. It does not get below 100 degrees, and it could be 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's still 100 degrees. So then – these guys hate me for saying this, but the nicest thing about the plane is it's got air conditioning. And I know. It just makes it a joy to fly.
It's just wrong.
Hey,
so wrong.
you guys could pick an early morning or an evening, and it's cooler to fly, but it doesn't make a difference for me out here. Like, you know, luckily now it's very nice, and we ain't got to use it, so I can use all the power of the engine now instead of having the air conditioner rob some of it. But
I can pick an afternoon and it's cooler to fly here.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to our next flight when the temperatures are going to be in the, you know, 60s in the morning. Because I even noticed from my last flight, October 10th, the performance difference from what it was even the flight before that the plane is just a completely different plane. It's like I leapt off the runway so much faster. So
you would be amazed because I've flown, it's about to snow, not quite about to snow, but it's already snowed or it's cold enough to, and you know, 30 degrees and you're flying a plane that's been pre-warmed and all that, but it's just amazing how smooth the air can be when you don't have that, you know, convection going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's just, Phoenix is just a huge city and concrete and streets everywhere. So if you don't get out and get the work done early in the morning, you're just bouncing around all over the place. Several months ago, I was doing my lessons at 5 in the morning, and now we've moved them to 6. And now it's even a little too dark for 6, so we're probably going to have to move till 7, or I'll start taking late afternoon flights or something. Anyways, enough about me. It's Mark's turn. Mark, tell us about your first flight.
Well, all right. I had my first flight February 2nd this year. Kind of regress a little bit. I'm a member of an aviation association here locally, and I know quite a few of the pilots and owners, and I met the owners of the local flight school, and one of them I got along with really, really well. It just happens to be that he's a former F-15 driver. I'm a former F-15 crew chief, so that right there, we hit it right off, and you know, being a co-owner of the school, he's like, yeah, come on out. You know, we'll get you going. We'll hook you up with one of the instructors. And I was like, well, aren't you taking any students? He's like, well, I really have a full load right now. And because he flies it's like a private pilot for a couple of corporations. He's their personal pilot also. But I said, come on. And his name is Dennis Pearson. And he's, you know, former Air Force. And I said, come on, Dennis, you know, just, you know, at least give me a couple of flights. And you know, that way we can say that we've flown together. And he goes, all right, come out here on this day and we'll go up and we'll see what you got. Cause you know, I've flown a little bit here and there in the past and nothing that's loggable. You know, when I was stationed in Europe, I flew a few times and, but it had been a long time since I've been in a GA airplane. So anyway, we meet up and we go through the whole flight thing and it you know, it takes about a half hour cause he's very meticulous. And then we get in the plane and pull out the checklist and we're going through all the pre-flight there and I get to start it up and we do the initial roll. We test brakes and he goes, okay, it's your airplane. He goes, get us down to the run-up area. And he's like, first thing, oh, don't hit anything. So I'm taxiing down, trying to do my best to stay on the center line. And again, I'm like a drunken sailor out there and my big feet up on the brakes and it was very humbling. I'll just say that. Feel for the airframe. I did better. Got down to the run-up area, pulled up the checklist again, and we're going through everything. And, you know, the run-up should take, what, a minute, maybe two? I thought I was down there for half an hour. It was just running the engine up, and we're going through every little thing, and I'm lost, and he's very, very patient, and we finally get through it all. Finally get out. He makes all the radio calls and it's a uncontrolled field. So he makes the calls and we check the pattern and he goes, okay, let's make our little 360 here. Then we'll head out and get on the center line of the runway. So we do that. And he goes, okay, now this is what we do. And he walks me through everything I needed to do. Lots of right rudder as we've talked about in the past. Come up on the power and he's got his feet just barely over the pedals, his hands barely on the yoke and I've got the throttle and I've got the yoke and we go rolling down the runway and kind of weaving a little bit, 60 knots, start pulling back, off we go. And I was like, I am in the air. I am so hooked. This is awesome. We end up climbing out. We get 800 feet or so above airfield elevation. He goes, okay, make your turn out here. So we head out over this lake that is out here. That's a big practice area. And he goes, okay, we're going to go do some level flight and turns and climbing turns, descending turns, and he throws something at me. He goes, okay, now let's do this. And I would do that maneuver. He's like, okay, you got a pretty good feel for that. Do this maneuver. And I'd do it, and he'd go, okay, that was pretty good. See, he threw a whole bunch of stuff at me, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm a wreck. I'm like, he's going to go, dude, you shouldn't even be flying. You're terrible. And after about one, I think it was 1.4 hours, we get back, and, you know, we're back on the ground, and I go, hey, guy, So how was that? He's all, well, I'll just tell you right now. He goes, you've done everything for the first two lessons. So when we come back again, you're starting lesson three. I'm like, what? Wait, time out.
Nice. I
did good. He's all, you did amazing. He goes, you're going to be flying with me as long as I can keep it and keep you in the schedule. I was like, sweet. I get back in my truck and after we had, you know, done all our paperwork and everything, and I'm in my truck driving back down the road and I'm just like, holy crap, did that just happen? I flew a plane and I did really well. So I was pretty excited. So I've had probably, I want to say I did three more lessons with Dennis than I did. I was doing some work around the house or at work or whatever, and I pulled a muscle on my lower back and that laid me up for about 8 weeks. And then when I was pretty much healed up and ready to go, I get a call from Dennis going, hey, I need to change you to a different instructor. What's going on? Are you mad at me because I can't, you know, couldn't fly with you or whatever? He's all, no, no, no. I got recalled. I'm on my way back to the Air Force and I'm on my way to Texas next week. I'm like, oh man. So that was it kind of sucked, but I'll tell you what, I got another instructor. His name is Greg, and he is a phenomenal instructor. He very patient, but very good. To the point that I'm at 9.9 hours right now, and he has full confidence in me that I'm ready to take the next step. So we'll see how that goes. My last flight was October 15th. I should be flying probably the 29th. We'll see how it goes, though. So it's been very wet weather here. If it holds off, I may get on. So we'll see. So that's pretty much it for me. That's where I'm at now.
Cool. Hey,
this is wrong, man. I'm at 26 hours.
Yeah, I'm at I think it was 18 something, but and we're referring to solo, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have
at my stage. I'll just continue on here. We're stage right now that I took the our last flight with my last flight with Greg. I unknowingly did my pre solo practical, and when we got back down on the ground, he goes, "Hey, give me your logbook," and he goes, "You've also got your medical, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, let me see it real quick." So I pull it out, and he flips it over, and he starts signing. I'm like, "What are you doing?" He's all, "I'm signing you up. You're ready to solo." I'm like, "What? What do you mean? You're endorsing me?" He's all, "Absolutely." So that was – I started, I don't know, getting the shakes then, and I'm still 2-3 weeks before I could fly again. But I've already got nerves, and I think it's going to be worse because I'm building up since I haven't been able to get right back in the plane again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes that's not a bad thing, though. But referring back to solo in different times, I going back to that a little bit, I was talking to my instructor. I was like, oh, back when I was around 9 hours. And I was like, cool, I'm going to be soloing soon. And she's like, no. I'm like, what? I've got several friends that are like soloing right around 10 hours. She goes, you know, that's probably true at a lot of different airports, but not here at Deer Valley. And she goes, if we were up in, let's say, Wickenburg, where like there's hardly any traffic, yeah, you'd be soloing. But and I don't know how it is for you guys. Are you at an uncontrolled airport or uncontrolled airfield, Mark?
Yeah, the two fields that I fly at are both uncontrolled.
And how about you, John? Is yours controlled or uncontrolled?
I originally started at an uncontrolled. I am now at a Class D controlled airspace.
Okay, and I'm at Deer Valley, and I mentioned it. I think I mentioned it before. Deer Valley is considered to be the busiest general aviation airport in the country, and there's several flight schools there. So you're constantly in the pattern with three, four airplanes. I would say there's always planes coming in. There's two runways, parallel runways, 7 left, 7 right. 25 right, 25 left, and it is just so busy that she's like, it would just be so wrong to send someone up at 10 hours.
I would
on
be
their
a
own.
Right.
Yeah, and I appreciate that now. I was feeling kind of like a little deflated at first, but I've got around 18 hours now in the logbook, and I should have been soloing by now too. Actually, I should have soloed today. But last week, she texted me and she said, "Oh, hey, we can't fly on Sunday. The prop got either nicked up or she said it got scuffed." I'm not sure what that means. I don't know if there was a bird strike to it or what, but I hadn't really heard. But so it had to get inspected. So I'm sure it had to get looked at by a mechanic, and probably I don't know if it had to be taken off and balanced or whatever. But so that had to get so we weren't flying Sunday. And then this Sunday she's gone to Mexico. So I should have been soloing this Sunday because she says, "All right, your next flight, as long as you're consistent on all your pattern work, I'm going to solo you the next time." I'm like, excellent. So I'm still two flights away, but still, you know, excited for it. But and then, John, I imagine similar thing kind of applies to you with being at a controlled airfield, a little bit more going on.
There's a lot more going on. I'm at the busiest airport, general aviation airport in the Baltimore area right now. And there's a lot of business jets in and out of there. There's a lot of GA traffic, and there's also an International Guard base. So on some weekends, you can get a lot of A-10 traffic, C-130 traffic, and the A-10s just make it horrible spacing because I've had to extend and do short finals on, like, so many patterns. Like, there was one day we literally got – I maybe had 7 landings that day, and one of them was a legit just rectangular pattern. every other one was weird. I was doing 360s. I'm extending the downwind. I'm doing, you know, he's like, can you make a short final right now? And my instructor's like, yeah, flaps slip down.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of that going on.
Yeah. So, and because of that, I've gotten real good on the radio. I love working the radio. I don't know about you guys, but I have almost as much excitement or enjoyment out of the radio work, talking with the towers, or when you're out in the practice area, you know, calling, hey, you know, telling everybody, you know, where you're at, what altitude you're at, what maneuvers you're doing, just in case anybody's out there, stuff like that. But I really enjoy the radio work, and I'm not afraid of it anymore. And it doesn't sound like everybody's an auctioneer, you know, and talking a mile a minute. I really enjoy it.
After today, I really have a lot better sense of the radio. Like, I feel more comfortable with it. At first I was scared to death of the radio. Like, I hated talking on it. I'm the kind of person, I don't want other people in the room when I'm talking on the phone, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so getting on the radio for me was really hard because I'm so worried about messing up. And at one point I was flying under Potomac Approach, which is in the DC SFRA, and I screwed up my tail number. And I was like freaking out because I'm like, oh God, I screwed up the tail number in the worst place to do it ever. And nothing ever came of it. It was, you know, the controller picked up. He knew who I was. He just mm-hmm. kind of shrugged it off and didn't say anything. But now that like I've actually handled the radio on my own, physically been the only one in the airplane handling the radio on my own and getting different things. You know, I had to extend my downwind a couple times today even. I feel so much more comfortable with it. And I actually kind of enjoy it too, now that I know the protocol and, you know, cause there's a rhyme and reason to it.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Mark? You liking the radio, or is it, you still a little timid on it, or?
Yeah, I'm getting pretty comfortable with it. Unless it gets into a very complex thing. We had a couple people in the pattern. We had an inbound, corporate jet coming into one of the fields, and they're coming in, ILS. And we're just coming in from the practice area, and he wanted me to say we were coming in, we're 10 miles entering on the crosswind for left traffic, da da da. And when he told me what to do, it was just like, what? What?
Yeah, yeah. When there's more than like one or two instructions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in the downwind on left traffic, and, you know, but he goes, all right, I'll get this one to do the next one. So he called it, and like, okay, that was a mouthful. But I still think I sound like a student. And he goes, no, you're doing fine. He goes, there's a lot of your radio calls that I don't even hear that you sound like a student. I'm like, okay, that's good.
Yeah, there
I'm
you go.
I'm thinking to myself, you're lying to me. I know you're lying to me.
Build your confidence. But, yeah, you know, it's
I enjoy the radio.
Yeah, it's when you start getting to that point and I'm starting to hear it, you know, I'm picking up on other people's mistakes. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, they just – and then all of a sudden the tower gets on them, like, I'm about, say, runway assignment. You know, like they said that they were cleared to taxi via Charlie 1, and that's all they say. And they don't mention that they're, you know, on going to be on 7 right or whatever. You know, I'm picking up on these things because I've done it myself. Now I'm hearing other people making the mistakes. So it feels good. I like doing it.
One of the things that my school highly recommended was just to pick up a scanner, if not a, you know, a full-blown ICOM radio,
mm-hmm.
And just listen. Just listen to the traffic, and you'll actually learn just from listening to the other traffic, you know?
Oh, so, yeah.
I listen to ATC.net, you know, at work if there's nothing else on the radio, and you start to pick up stuff, and it's like, wow, okay, I get that. I understand what they're talking about now, so...
Yeah. Speaking of that, I got so fortunate. My daughter's boyfriend, his dad used to be a helicopter pilot, and he hasn't flown in years. And when I started from my first flight, before my first flight, he gave me his whole old flight bag with everything. So I got a David Clark model H1060 headset, brand new, is practically brand new, with all kinds of extra attachments to it. And an ICOM IC-A121 NAVCOM radio. So it's a transceiver. So you can do navigation with it and everything. And his flight bag and a knee board. I was like, holy cow. He gave me like $500 worth of gear for free.
So does he not fly anymore?
Mm-mm. No, unfortunately, he doesn't. He used to be helicopter pilot and stuff, but he hasn't flown in years.
So. Well, you know what? There's one of your first passengers.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, he's definitely got to take him up as often as he wants to go for hooking me up like that, because, you know, that's a big expense to get started with, you know, your headset and all that stuff. But
absolutely,
you know, a nice David Clark headset plus a transceiver like that, I was stoked.
Yeah, I spent about $650 on my headset.
No doubt, no doubt.
I mean, stuff's expensive.
Did you get a Zulu or something?
I got the Sierra. I went to Oshkosh knowing I was going to start training again, and I knew that I didn't want to use the rentals after I got a rental headset that literally you put the mic in front of your face and it just fell down. And I'm just like, this isn't going to work. I need to just buy one. I might as well buy something that will last for a long time, because I know this is something I'm going to continue doing. You know, I know they tell some students, you know, don't necessarily buy a headset right at the beginning because you may not like it, you may not continue, that kind of thing. There's no doubt in my mind that I'm going to keep going with this. So,
yeah.
You know, it's funny. A friend of mine who owns a Cirrus SR20, he's got a Lightspeed Zulu, and I tried it on one time, and I'm like, oh man, I got to get one of these. And I looked at the price. I was like, well, I guess I'm not going to get one of those right now. And then I saw Will and Rico that were doing fundraisers for A Pilot Story, the film. And every time they would put one up for auction, I would bid on it, and I've obviously never been successful. But that's a nice, nice headset. If you can get something like this.
Yeah, my buddy Dean, who's got that little Cessna 140 I was talking about, his wife bought one for him for his birthday. It's the Lightspeed. I guess it's the Zulu with all the noise canceling and everything.
Yeah,
it's just incredible. He had me put it on the other day. I was like, oh wow, it's really comfortable and really blocks out a lot of noise. He goes, wait a minute, hit this button. He hits the button for the active noise canceling, and it went from silence to dead silence. It was so weird. I couldn't even describe the difference in silence, because it was like, how do they do that? I don't understand how this thing could do it. And it's Bluetooth. He pairs it with his telephone, so he can use his phone through the headset, which is awesome. What a nice headset that is.
Yeah.
I mine has that too. I have the Sierra is essentially the Zulu. It's a little heavier. It doesn't have the same exact quality of noise canceling, but it's just still so amazing when you flip that button. And in the plane, when you flip that button, like, you don't even notice, you know, how much of that low engine noise that is there until you flip it. And then it's like all of a sudden half the noise in the plane just goes silent. And yeah, you can hear the radio calls better. You can hear your instructor better. Like, it's great.
Yeah, the quality's got to be incredible. It's just, they make awesome products. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Stuart Stevenson, a.k.a. Pilot Stu, from the Pilot's Journey podcast.
And I'm Stuart Stoll, a.k.a. CFI Stu, inviting you to join us for the Pilot's Journey podcast, where we discuss aviation, proficiency, and most of all, enjoying the journey.
You can find us in iTunes or at pilotsjourneypodcast.com. And don't forget to enjoy the journey.
Hey, so let's come back around to the big news of this episode.
What is that?
So, John, do you have something you want to tell us?
So, yes, I had some fun things happen, as probably most of the people on Twitter know already. So, I did actually solo today.
Outstanding. Congratulations.
I didn't think I was – thank you. I didn't think I was going to.
Really?
I got a here's why. I got a text message last night from my instructor saying he couldn't fly with me today, and I was all bummed. Like, man, that sucks. I'm going to have to wait 2 weeks because I'm going away next weekend. And I was like, I'm not going to be able to fly tomorrow. Crap. So this morning, I'm kind of laying there in bed. It's 10 o'clock already. I was supposed to fly from 10 to something. I don't know. But I'm laying in bed at 10 o'clock, and I get a call from the flight school. And it's another instructor, and he's like, so are you coming in today? And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, I'm taking over Tony's students for today. Are you still coming in? I was like, yeah, can you wait 40 minutes? And he's like, yeah, sure, we'll see when you get here. So I literally just bolted out of bed. I was like, crap, find my clothes, get dressed, get out the door as quick as I could, get to the airport. Cause I had, like, when I woke up, I looked at ForeFlight and checked the weather, cause it was going to be kind of iffy earlier on the week. It said it was going to rain, and then it slowly started looking better. And I checked the METAR and I was like, it's scattered at 20,000 feet, 10 statute miles visibility, winds calm. And I'm like, I looked at that this morning and I'm like, well, this sucks. I could have soloed today. And then I get that call and then I'm like, all right, out the door. Yeah, so I head up to the airport and yeah, it was just bolt. So I get up to the airport and meet this guy. I actually hadn't flown with this instructor before. So he's like, all right, cool. He's like, so we'll go ahead over to the Eastern Shore because I'm right on the Chesapeake Bay. He's like, we'll go over to the other side of the bay. We'll do the maneuvers so I can kind of make sure that you can do them. And then we'll come back, do a few touch and goes. And if you don't scare me or kill me, I'll sign you off. I was like, all right.
And how'd that make you feel with an instructor you've never flown with yet?
I was a little nervous.
Did you feel added pressure because he doesn't know any of your tendencies or anything like that?
Yeah, there was the added pressure of that. There was also the because I've always flown with – I've flown with two instructors and I had one stage check with another one. I'm not actually doing part 141, but I still had a stage check with another instructor. So I technically flown with three instructors before this. And it was weird because, you know, he has a lot of his own things that he does and he looks for in students. So for the pre-flight, the takeoff, you know, all the run-up and going over to the bay and doing the maneuvers, you know, he's constantly adding these things like, oh, well, you should do this or you should do this or you should write this down. And it was kind of like I'm sitting there like, oh, man, I'm forgetting all this stuff. I'm not doing all this stuff the way he wants it. And I'm just kind of like, well, crap. You know, maybe I won't solo today. So we finish up all the maneuvers, you know, we go out, do the maneuvers, finish them up, come back. And as we're coming back, he's like, you're doing a really good job. He's like, you've got great control of the airplane. You're doing everything the way you should. You're doing it all within the PTS standards. And you haven't scared me or killed me. So he's like, we'll go back. We'll do a few touch and goes. And if you don't scare me there, I'll sign off for you. And he's like, if I do sign off for you, he's like, you going to party tonight? And I was like, no, I'm going to podcast.
Yes. But,
nice.
So we come in. I do the first landing. I was just amazed at how, like, I didn't think I had it in me to pull off that landing, and it was just beautiful. Just kind of kissed the ground and just settled. And he was like, "Wow, nice." And I was like sitting there like, "Yeah, wow."
Yeah, wow.
So we took off, went around to go around, and then came back for a full stop. And he's like, "All right. Park, he's like, why don't we go over these hangars?" And then he gets out of the plane. He's like, all right, I'm going to see your logbook. Signs that. He's like, go give me three. I'll stand over here. Come pick me up when you come back. And I'm sitting there like, okay, cool. So I get in the airplane and I think I sat there for a minute, just like looking around before I even started the startup checklist. And I did the checklist. I double checked everything. Like, I'm constantly like nervous. I'm going to forget something. I'm going to do something wrong. And I'm like double checking all my checklists. I'm like, okay, you know, the fuel flows on both. I'm double check that. Okay, the fuel flows on both. Good. All right, now I'll move on.
You're more cautious than ever now, right?
Yeah.
No backup in the plane.
There's nobody to catch the mistakes. So I'm like I'm reading through slow as I can through the checklists. And I almost didn't want to start it up. Honestly, like I'm sitting there and I'm like I'm holding the key in my hand. I got my hand on the mixture because when you start this one up, you have to push in the mixture right after it catches. You put in the mixture and so I got my hands on both and I'm just looking around and I'm like, am I sure I didn't forget anything? And I'm looking around. I'm like, okay, well, I might as well just do it. So I start the plane up and he's standing over there far off and I kind of look over as I started like waiting for like a nod like, okay, you're good.
It can't be too careful.
Yeah, so I did that. I started taxiing, and that was kind of weird because, you know, I keep looking over. I'm like, the seat's empty. Like, this isn't right. It's a taxi ground call, which I was coming out of a different area, so I kind of messed that one up a little bit. Just kind of, like, freaking out and just I don't even know. It was crazy. But make my ground call, start taxiing. You know, and I'm taxiing down. And I think the whole way I was taxiing, I was just smiling the whole way. I think at one point I started saying, you know, this is just nuts.
No, this is nuts. There's nobody else to me.
That's exactly what I said. And then I go do the run out, and I'm double checking everything there. And then, you know, I head up and get board of the runway.
Cessna 172 Romeo Hotel, Martin Tower, line up and wait.
Line up and wait.
American Way, 172 Romeo Hotel.
Score.
Nice. On your
first. So that starts my solo flight. I get to line up and wait.
Might as well start it off with a brand new phraseology.
So I'll tell you the background on that one. I pull up, hold short of the runway. You know, I turn to face final. You know, make sure nobody's coming as I make the radio call. I make the tower call, and I wait like 5 seconds. I don't hear anything. I'm like, oh, crap. And then as soon as I think that, I see this like Gulf Stream just fly right by me and land. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. That must be why he's not saying anything. And then he comes on, and I knew as soon as he clicked in and said to Romeo Hotel, I was like, I'm getting a lineup and wait. And I did. So, you know, I start lining up, and actually there's a humongous displaced threshold. So I was actually still taxiing up to the threshold of the runway when he gave me a cleared for takeoff. I never actually waited, but I hit the threshold, and I was like, this is going to happen. Hit the power, and off I was. I did two touch and goes and a full stop. The first landing was the best of all of them. I landed and I remember loudly saying in the plane, wow, that was awesome.
That was beautiful. That was freaking beautiful.
Nice.
Very cool.
I did get a extended downwind on the last one, which was interesting. Because there was a couple, I think as soon as I started to solo, everybody decided to come to the airport at once. So it kind of got a little busy, but...
sure, might as well. Might as well get your money's worth.
That's when you want to jump on the radio and go, do you guys know that I'm just now soloing?
Yeah, student pilot in the air. I advise advert to the nearest runway or to the nearest airport other than this one. Yeah, I know when I solo, I'm going to tell the tower, student pilot on his first solo, beware.
I considered that. I honestly considered staying student pilot because I know a lot of people do that, but... I just didn't. I didn't feel like it. I was like, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I'm just going to do this. And if I can do it without having to say that and without getting special attention, I think it's going to be even more cool. You know, and sometimes I kind of freeze up on the radio, but during that solo, it just wasn't, I never had an issue with it. I was like constantly, I was on the ball with it. It was kind of cool. Because as soon as as soon as I taxied onto the runway, I wasn't nervous anymore. I was kind of like, this is going to happen. I know what to do here. And then I just did it. And it was really cool. The weird thing though, was when I pulled the power, I was beaming the numbers for the first landing. I pulled the power, I hit the flaps. I'm kind of sitting there at 80 knots. And then I looked at the altimeter and I'm like, I didn't lose any altitude. I'm like, I lost like maybe 1500 feet. I'm like, I should have lost 200 feet by now. Like something's not. Oh yeah.
Missing a couple.
There's nobody
pounds.
There.
Yeah, a lighter airplane now.
It definitely it jumped off the runway. I didn't have to pull it like I usually do. It was a little odd, but it wasn't too much different where I was like, you know, scared of it or worried about it. But it was definitely, it handled a little different. It was getting blown around a little easier.
Could you see a difference in your feet per minute gauge? I don't know if you were looking at that, but I'm depending on, you know, how hot it is. I'm between 500 and 750. Later, you know, now it's more like 750 feet per minute. But how about what was it like for you without that other person?
I never, at least on climb out, I never necessarily look at that because I'm just putting the nose on the horizon and going. And when I hit 800 feet, I start turning crosswind.
Ah, okay.
So I wasn't really looking at that. And you know, I didn't even think to, because at that point I was in full flying the plane mode. I wasn't really thinking about, like, I wanted to kind of call everything out. So the recording I had a lot more audio in it. Honestly, I wasn't thinking about it because I was just so in the, I'm flying the plane. Here's what I need to do. And just doing it.
Yeah. That's job one.
Yeah. And it was really cool when I got down and I was like, I just did that. I did make somebody go around though on my full stop, which was kind of funny. Cause I had a guy behind me. I had three other guys behind me. And as soon as I landed, because I wasn't slamming on the brakes there. I'm like, that's just not right. I'll just go to the next one. So I'm going down to get to the next one. I hear the controller come on. He's like, yeah, go around for spacing.
So were you two touch and goes and a full stop that for your solo part?
Yeah, I did three landings.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So, hey, Chris, your instructor, does she tell you what you're expected to do?
Yeah.
You do your solo?
When I solo, yeah. So it sounds like pretty much the same thing. So on my next lesson, it's going to be, you know, a whole lesson, an hour lesson of just in the pattern. And typically, on the other days that I was just doing touch and goes, I was getting in 7 landings. So she says, if I can keep all them good and consistent, then the next lesson I'll be soloing. So I imagine on that next lesson, we'll probably go up and she'll talk with me and I'll do probably 1 or 2, I guess. And then she's going to get out and then just listen on the radio and have me do 3 in the pattern too. I think that's the way it's going to go.
Okay, cool. I was just checking to see if what the difference would be. Was between the three of us. My instructor told me that I have to do 3 full stops, taxi back to complete my phase.
And speaking of that, I don't think people know yet. So I've got a private instructor, not going through a school, and both of you guys are going through a school, right?
Correct.
Okay. And Mark, yes. You had the same instructor the whole time?
My second instructor, but it's the same school.
Oh, that's right. You'd mentioned that. You had one early on, and then you've been with this guy the longest, though, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And then, John, you just hit your second instructor for the first time just because your other one wasn't available. Otherwise, he'd be there, right?
Technically, it's the fourth.
Oh.
I've had I was at one school with one instructor for my first 13 lessons, 13 hours. And then I had I think I finished up in April and I started again in August. I kind of ran out of money my last semester of college and couldn't really continue it. I didn't have any money anymore. And I was like, I'm going to have to stop until I get my full-time job worked out. And finally in August, I was able to do it again. And I decided to get out of the SFRA and go to another airport, actually, that was closer to like my family. So I ended up with the instructor I have now, Tony. And then I did one stage check kind of thing with another instructor there, Adam, and then I had a new instructor today just because my instructor couldn't make it. So technically
4. Okay.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, we are student pilots. So anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of a student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
Let's set up some shout-outs. I have quite a few. My first shout-out is to my current CFI, CFI Tony, for getting me to where I am, to being able to solo. Also my CFI Matt, who was my original instructor for my first 13 hours. You know, he gave me all the fundamental stuff. Also like to shout out to all of the other podcasts that have pretty much kept me interested in flying during my downtime and getting me reinterested in flying enough to actually find the money to do it. It was through podcasts that got me through that Oshkosh to when I started flying again. I think if I wasn't listening and actively involved in the aviation community on Twitter and through podcasts, I probably wouldn't have started again. At least for a couple of years before I, you know, definitely had the money. You know, I wouldn't have been soloing today if it really wasn't for that. A couple other ones I got. Everyone I met at Oshten. That was just a great week. I can't wait for Oshkosh 11. I met so many people from Twitter there. It was just awesome. And then, let's see, lastly, probably CFI Stu for give me some good pre-solo exam information and kind of appeasing my nervousness about it. Because at the time I didn't really realize it was going to be a take-home exam, and I was kind of freaking out about, I'm going to have to take this exam, I don't really know what's on it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's my shout-outs. Chris, you have any shout-outs?
None specifically, just, you know, thanks a lot again, all the guys on Twitter. I know, I'm sorry that we've been kind of spamming you guys, pimping our podcast here, but we really appreciate all the enthusiasm and you know, well wishes and everything, and all the subscribers. We really appreciate that, and we hope you enjoy our podcast and continue to listen and tell your friends. And go over and visit inthepatternpodcast.com, the website, once in a while. Check it out for the latest blogs. You know, I'm also doing videos on almost all of my flights, and you can find me on YouTube if you hunt for me under the same as my Twitter name, CHOLUBAZ. You can see almost every one of my flights that I've taken so far. Other than that, I've really been enjoying this and looking forward to the next one.
Oh, cool. So, Mark, have any shout-outs for this episode?
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout out to my instructor too, Greg Patelzak. Great guy. He's very patient with me, and I really appreciate that. Also, the guys on Twitter that have been very, very supportive. Nate, Denver Pilot, for coming on with us off the air and giving us a bunch of technical advice. I found that very helpful. And also Dave Flies, super nice guy. I've never met either one of these guys in person. I can't wait to do it, but they're two really cool people. And everybody else in the Twitterverse and podcasting world. If it wasn't for the big gurus, the UCAP gang, and Will, I probably wouldn't have gotten back into it. Thank you, guys. And because of you, I got back into flying. And hopefully later this week, I'll be soloing. But anyway, that's what I have.
Cool, yeah. Everyone on Twitter has just been such a great help. And I'm amazed at how much traffic we've gotten without having a full-length episode out. It just amazes me. So you can find the In the Pattern Podcast. Our website is inthepatternpodcast.com. We also have a page on My Transponder. It should be listed under In the Pattern. You can also find us at iTunes if you search for In the Pattern or In the Pattern Podcast. You can reach all of us on the In the Pattern Podcast by email through podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com or on Twitter as In the Pattern. You can reach me at john@inthepatternpodcast.com, on Twitter as Pilot Conway, and also on My Transponder as Pilot Conway. Chris?
Yeah, you can find me at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com as well. On Twitter at CHOLUBAZ, that's CHOLUBAZ. And My Transponder is also CHOLUBAZ. And Mark?
Yeah, you can find me at mark@inthepatternpodcast.com, student pilot Mark on Twitter, and M. Lacoste on My Transponder. Give us a shout.
Cool. And lastly, just because we can and because Google is awesome, you can also call us if you'd like. Leave a voicemail. I'm sure we could probably fit it into playing back the show or something like that. At 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01.
And that about wraps us up for this episode of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank you for listening this week and hope you join us next week. Remember, make left traffic clear for the option.
This and other great shows at the Aviation Podcast Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
So that was my...
You're cutting out. We're just hearing this. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's funny. So that's what he sounded like in that 30 seconds of terror.
I'd like to thank y'all for listening, and we need a catchphrase. End of the podcast catchphrase.
Well, this is a fine time to come up with one.
Exactly. We're all like,
That's why I realized that I needed something else to say there. Like, oh, well, go. I don't know. We need something to say there. Thanks for listening to the Pattern Podcast. Blah, blah, blah. I've already got some blooper material. Blooper wheel material. As I am blooper, the blooper reel material.